Welcome to Sex, Body and Soul. I'm Kate Roberts, founder of The Body Agency, and on this show, we talk about the marvel that is our bodies, what they can do, and what they need to thrive. Ladies out there, our time is now. Let's get to it.
Sex, we all do it. And our next guest is quite the expert. Elizabeth Dell is the founder of Amorous and a trained sex educator with a master's in public health from UC Berkeley. She was previously a filmmaker producing multiple indie features, including Destination Wedding, starring Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves. Amorous brings her lifetime of intimacy and her storytelling together to help partners play and tell each other their most delicious stories. Welcome to the show, Elizabeth Dell. Elizabeth, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
Well, I am too, because I've been dying to do a show on sexual communication and how to really use communication to build a closer and better relationship with your partner, but also to have really good sex, whether it's with your partner or without. So I was very happy to come across you, and you are very interesting person. You have made movies with people like the very sexy Keanu Reeves and Winona Ryder. You're a storyteller by nature and a filmmaker. And then you went along and started a company called Amorous, which is all about sex. So tell us about your journey and why you decided that that was a good idea.
Yes, I was a film producer, so made lots of fun indie movies. But I'm also someone who's always been fascinated by intimacy, by sexuality, and by how people communicate. I mean, making movies is telling stories to the world. And so it is the ultimate opportunity to think really hard about how do we communicate? How do we tell stories? What motivates people? What moves them? These are things that have always made me really excited. And then the pandemic happened and everyone went into their separate little lockdowns and quarantines. I was starting to see someone, but it was very early. And so they were not in my quarantine circle. And I am someone who needs intimacy, right? When we all do. And pleasure and sexuality, like that's a coping mechanism for me. To quote Emily Nagoski, like anxiety is an accelerator, not a brake. And so I was leaning in hard to intimacy and to sexuality in the beginning of the pandemic. I was burning up my thumbs with my partner remotely because I lived with a sister. I was taking care of an elderly neighbor. Like I was not in a position to physically let anyone else into my containment circle, but I definitely needed this. And I am an expert storyteller. I'm really good at intimacy over a phone, actually. Like I'm good at sexting. I'm good at sexy chat. And even I was getting really burned out. I was getting exhausted. You know, in an apocalypse is not when I was the funniest, most creative self and the most able to like bring ideas about how to do this well. So I went looking for help.
So I want to paint the picture here. You'd met a guy just before the pandemic. He wasn't able to come over because we were on lockdown. And so you basically had a sexting relationship. Was it also on video?
It was an evolving relationship. I mean, we did a lot of things over the course of time. And then eventually he ended up actually moving down to LA. And then eventually the relationship didn't end up working out after a while. So that relationship over the last 3.5 years did all of the journey. But at the beginning of it, it was a very brand new exploring each other, but not in each other's physical space. And so we had to use digital tools. And so we started out with a lot of sexting, started out with a lot of text conversations, and there were, you know, evolved eventually to have phone and video and other things. But a huge amount of what we did was telling stories to each other, was getting delicious in an imaginary world, in a fantasy setting, or sort of in our language. And I really, like, it was so much fun. I was having such a good time. I wanted more of that, but I was running out of ideas. I was running out of what to do, what to say, how to do this. And this was fairly early in the pandemic. I thought, well, okay, that's fine. I'll just go ask the internet. Like, I'll go find some games for us to play. This will be very straightforward. And then I went looking and I couldn't really find anything. And I was shocked. There was this moment where I was like, well, maybe the internet didn't understand my question. I was asking for sex. Like, that's its purpose. That's why we built it. How can the answer be no? But what I found was that while there is an almost infinite amount of solo journeys, whether that's educational or therapeutic or entertainment, if that's porn or that's identity exploration, there's so many things you can do by yourself. If what you're asking for is to center a relationship with another person, if you're asking for basically a two-player game, like how do I improve what I'm doing with another person, not just go on a journey by myself? That's where I really came up short. And what I would find was either like truth or dare games that were 20 years old and kind of felt cheesy and misogynistic or a little bit like sketchy, or tools oriented towards, oh, you're a relationship on the rocks. You know, you are in trouble. How do we help you get back on track? And this was not that. This was a fairly early relationship. We were just having a good time. And I was like, I don't want to be fixed. I just like want training wheels. I want help. I want ideas.
So when you go onto the Amorous app, what do you find? Like, do you give tips?
You find games.
Oh, is it all games?
It's mostly games. So the way Amorous is built is to center a relationship between two people. And the way you are in relationship via a piece of technology is conversation. So Amorous is an app that exists only in two-player mode. There's really not very much one person can do on Amorous. You go, you create a user, you invite your partner, whoever that partner is to you, to connect directly, and then you exist in a one-to-one relationship with them, and you exist in chat, right? Like, so the home you live in is a chat stream with your person. And then the way we facilitate intimacy and sexiness is that integrated into that are a bunch of games, all of which were about how do we help you flirt with each other? How do we help you start new conversations? How do we help you uncover shared desires? Because these are the things that I wanted. I was like, what I want to be doing is talking to my person. I want to be imagining sex with my person. I mostly want to be paying attention to my person. I just want something to kick that off. How do I make that a little easier? And so, for instance, we have a game called Chat Sparks, which is hundreds and hundreds of conversation prompts. So you hit the button and you both get asked a question like, if you had $50 to fulfill a fantasy, how would you spend it?
I'm having a dinner party tonight and I almost feel like I need to download this app and play this game over dinner. You know, like, I love this stuff. Are you kidding me? So as we know, the mind is our sexiest organ, right? And, you know, sexting and sort of building up to that anticipation of like what's going to happen later is, you know, it can be really, really exciting and erotic. But what I want to touch on a little bit is the dangers and the privacy of once you trust, well, maybe you've touched and trusted and therefore sent a photo of the touching out there. And that troubles me a little bit because once it's out there, right? And we actually, in my last company, we fired somebody because we knew that a percentage of the day he was watching porn on his computer and on his cell phone, looking at OnlyFans or, you know, sexting or whatever. Like, let's cover the safety aspect of it. And then let's get into the really juicy stuff of using communications for intimacy.
Well, you said something that I think is really interesting. You said, when it's out there, it's out there. And here's the thing that I would ask. Why do we let that be the case? I mean, listen, like I know why. It has to do with tech and tech's abilities and like what we can and cannot do. Historically, what we could do was send a thing and it went from A to B. And once it was at B and that was that. Once you send a sexy picture in the world, it's on somebody else's phone and you have no more control over that. But that's a technology. That's not a moral choice. There's no ethical choice that says that's the way it should be. And in fact, with everything else that is content related, our hundreds of years of history is that no, if you create content, if that's a picture of yourself or a novel by Charles Dickens or a personal letter that, you know, the King of France sent in 1422, you own, whoever generated that content owns that. You can't take it and be like, no, but I have it in my hand, so now I can reprint it at will anywhere I want and make money off of it and sell it or share it, or like, you just can't. That's not how copyright works. We have a whole system that's like, no, the moral ownership of the thing belongs to the person who created it. We embed that in Amorous. So everything on Amorous is encrypted away from us. We don't read, we don't share, we don't sell. It's encrypted in transit. We store in the cloud. We don't store on people's individual phones specifically so that we can maintain permissions. But we have something that I call revocable consent, which is anything you send on our app, you always have control to unsend. If I decide in a minute or a week or a year that that picture that I sent you, I don't really want you to have anymore, or that thing that I wrote last night when I was in the frenzy of arousal, and I'm like, yeah, but actually I don't really know that I want receipts on that. That was like a bridge too far now that I'm thinking about it.
And that happens, right? And in this day and age with online dating and the flirting and the, you know, the back and forth and the, hey, can you just send me a picture of this and that? And it's terrifying, especially for us parents, like with teenage children who, you know, are on Instagram and they're on TikTok and they're communicating with complete strangers. And before you know it, they've sent a picture of their boobs. And I think this is a big, big problem.
It absolutely is. So there are certain things that we as an app can and cannot do, right? And so I cannot shut down the ability of your phone to take a screenshot because that is interfering with Apple and Apple gets kind of mad about that. But what I can do is I can recognize the minute it happens and I can send a message to both parties that says, hey, a screenshot just got taken, time for a conversation about consent. And so that everybody knows that it doesn't leave Amorous. And I can create in Amorous, which, and this is what we have done, really great archive functionalities so that we are your library for sexy and it can live here and you can find it and you can go back and look at that picture and you can have a really fun time and you don't need to take it off of our app in order to enjoy it. But as such, the person who sent it always controls it. So you can enjoy it as long as I have it sent to you. But if I decide in a week, I don't want it there anymore, I will go and I can hit delete on that picture that I sent, or you could do for one that you sent to me. And it will delete on both sides automatically, immediately for both of us.
Love it. I'm very happy to hear that you've made that a thing. Let's talk about porn for a second, because I've actually done a couple of shows on porn. I interviewed, his stage name is Mark Davis, British adult film actor. He's made about 4,000 scenes, right? So he was on the show. It's a good show. I think it's amazing what you've done, because obviously porn is one click away, right? And a lot of these apps like, you know, OnlyFans and TikTok and, you know, there's just so many of these apps. There's ways of also kids just leading them to porn sites. And, you know, I've had this conversation with a couple of our investors, actually, which is why they wanted to invest in The Body Agency, because we are sort of like almost taking a medical approach to sexual wellness and an ethical approach to sexual wellness from head to toe. So this conversation is obviously about head, right? Because it's really important that we can stimulate our brains. But then, you know, what it leads to is great sexual wellness and intimacy. And, you know, that is a massive part of our health and health care, right? But when you look at the porn industry and, you know, places like Pornhub, and which you really can find everything, there's very little, as you said, almost non-existent porn that has been developed for women by women. And porn is storytelling, right? It is storytelling. But it's the same old stuff, right? And, you know, you can kind of search up what you want, but it's ultimately abusive to women and it's tailored to men. And we are completely lacking. I mean, I remember this film from the 70s called The Green Door. I don't know whether you've heard of it. And if you haven't, you should absolutely watch it. But it's this sort of mystical story that is highly erotic to women. I think it was mostly watched by women. And it was in the years of, I think, VHS, if you remember those years. And, you know, it was, I think, a very well-made film, very erotic for women. But what is missing is what you've done. And that is to give people, you know, tips on games and flirting and role play and sexting. So let's get into it, Elizabeth. Let's get into it.
I mean, listen, I think there are so many amazing things that you can access in the world that you can learn for yourself. The piece that I felt was really missing is centering the conversation with your actual other person, right? That, like, I want the person that I'm having sex with, or that I might have sex with, or that I could have better sex with, I want to talk to them. I want to improve that. That's the piece that, for me, like, there's a charge in the actual other person that's, you know, my potential partner or my actual partner. That's so much more charged than watching strangers. And so how do we make that glow and sparkle and crackle?
And I could not agree more. And the sexiest moments I've had in my sexual years have been those types of games and those types of communications. And that's what stuck with me. And being able to communicate in a way that turns the two of you on is obviously a journey, right? And a lot of people, especially as we get older, they're in a rut, right? They'll be doing the same thing over and over again. I mean, if you've been married for 20 years, right, you've pretty much gotten into a rhythm if you are still even having sex, right? And I want to hear from you. What are some of the tips? Let's go through categories, right? First of all, let's start with early stage dating and flirting. What are some of the tips that you would give, you know, as you're about to start your sexual journey together, your early stage dating, you've both decided that you're going to be intimate with each other. Let's start with that category. Then let's get on to long-term relationships and, like, how to use communication to, like, spice things up. And then the last thing I want to talk about is, what are these games and some examples of some of these games?
Yeah. So I would say early stage, my biggest tip would be open in communication. I think we have this gift that we give new relationships when you're learning about each other. The job you're supposed to be doing is learning about each other. You're supposed to be asking questions. You're supposed to be figuring out how the other person thinks, what turns them on, what gets them excited, how they feel about their family, all of these things. And so laying some patterns, assuming that that's a relationship that is successful and continues on, you're laying patterns down for the rest of your relationship. And so laying patterns that are curious and inquisitive, that involve communication, because it's not impossible. Everybody can be better communicators at every part of a relationship. But if you've started out with good patterns, it's much easier to keep good patterns than it is to try and create them 20 years in. And so have conversations the first time you have sex. It's like, oh, did you like that? Can I do it better? Where else could I do that? What else would you like me to do? If you're laying the pattern in your first intimate encounters that I want to hear your feedback, like, I'm interested. I think there's this tendency to kind of, oh, well, I don't want to do it wrong. So if I say nothing, or if I, like, just try and magically listen to body cues, then I won't make them upset, or I won't make them uncomfortable.
I've got a question, and this is important because I am going to have questions in all these different categories, right? So I might interrupt you. I apologize in advance for that, but I also will forget my question. That's why I have to interrupt you. So early dating, right? Everyone's getting along great. You've gone up your dinners. You're ready to sort of have sex. Shouldn't the communication start before you go and have sex? I mean, I'm a little bit old-fashioned and traditional where, you know, I really like to get to know the person. I don't have sex easily. I'm not a one-night stand kind of girl. Like, I need to have obviously a connection. I'm not going to just have sex for the sake of having sex. But doesn't this communication start before you go and have sex? And what I'm insinuating is, do you not start having the sexual conversation before you have sex? As in, you know, you're making out, everything's going in the right direction. Isn't it sexy to even like start having that? Well, what do you like? And even before you start beginning, I mean, isn't then the first experience going to be much better?
Yeah, I think so. I think we have this interesting system in the United States where somehow, I mean, not just the United States, but especially American culture, where, you know, people start kissing and then, you know, the movie cuts to the morning after. We don't show foreplay. We don't show kind of, let's have a community conversation. So a lot of times people assume that you're just supposed to know. No, I agree completely that we should be having conversations about this in light of the way we're sort of taught by society's larger pieces. Sometimes it's not easy to sort of sit at a dinner table on a first date and be like, so how do you like to be touched sexually? That can be hard for people. But I would also say, you know, I agree completely that we should start those conversations early. And I think sometimes putting a different spin on them, having them be conversations about pleasure and not conversations about sex. And it's all the same conversation, but framing it of, you know, what brings you pleasure? What brings you joy? Like, how does your body respond to things? And that might be a question of like, do you like a hard workout? You know, do you like to like sweat?
I'm getting all sorts of ideas now in my head where you've had your dates, you're on date number, I don't know, whatever it is, 6, play one of those sexy games, right? You were just talking about the card game where you have to ask each other questions and just like make it fun and gather your information in that way, which again could be highly erotic. Okay, now let's move on to the next phase of long-term relationships. Now, I happen to really like vibrators. In fact, we sell a sexual wellness kit at the Body Agency that is especially designed for perimenopausal and menopausal women, where, of course, you know, we can get vaginal dryness and whatever. But I am a huge fan. And if you've listened to the podcast we did, Becoming Clitorate, it's all explained there. So I like vibrators. They're very efficient, right? They get the job done. And they are sometimes more efficient than the actual guy itself. And I have, with my own experience, but also have, you know, heard so many stories from my friends where, you know, men have got this sort of ego, right? Where they believe that for all these years, they've been a stud and that they've been satisfying their woman. And, you know, half the time the women have been faking it to like get it over with or, you know, not communicating, basically. So let's now get onto that category of, you know, you're in a long-term monogamous relationship with someone and you want to like introduce toys or other things and games into the relationship and things are perhaps getting a little boring. What are your thoughts on all of that?
So I think we give ourselves a lot of permission to change in almost every place except sexuality. I always find that really interesting that, you know, in a long-term relationship, if your partner came to you after 5 years and said, hey, I think I want to learn how to play guitar, that would not be a personal betrayal. That would not be a like, oh my God, but 5 years ago, you told me that you don't like guitar and now you like guitar and what have I done wrong? And yet we often jump to something like that if a partner comes and says, hey, I was thinking like it might be kind of fun to spice something up in the bedroom and try something new. There is this, wait, but you didn't tell me that when we first started. Like, why am I not enough? And so I think starting from just a place of, hey, all of us like new things. So new and novel is not fundamentally a denial of what we have before, that this is something that's going to be fun for both of us. But trying to find neutral ground, I think, is also a really good tip for this. You know, having a conversation. So for instance, if it's a vibrator, maybe it's, can we go to a sex toy store together? Can we find a fun store and go? And maybe that's a one for you and a one for me. Or maybe that's, we're going to find a thing and we're going to spend a whole night just having a play around this thing. And it can be something that you know how to use, or I know how to use, or neither of us does. And we're just going to have an adventure. And we're going to be open to the idea that that adventure might be really fun and delicious and full of orgasms. That adventure might be a complete miss. Right? Like, we might get a thing and then we can't figure out how to use it, or we don't have the right batteries in the house, or it just was like, I had a partner years and years ago who tried to make his own lube one night. And it turns out that, like, if you put too much of the powder in the mix, it's like good for a while. And then it turns into glue. And then the two of you are like glued together on a bed. And that's not really sexy. And you're like, oh man, are we going to lose skin if we try and pull each other apart to get into the shower? Hilarious now, but like, allow for that. Allow for like, okay, we're going to go, we're going to figure something out. And it might be an epic story for the ages that we had to live through together, but now we're bonded.
What about when, you know, anal, let's just talk about anal for a second, because anal seems to be on the up. No pun intended. A lot of men like it. And apparently if it's done well, it can be pleasurous for women. But I would say mostly it's a guy thing. And I mean, I don't know, you're more of an expert than I am. I actually don't know this for sure. But what would happen if the guy was then to say, listen, you know, I've been fantasizing about this and I really want to have anal sex, and the woman is completely against it and she has to turn him down?
I think turning down is a thing that is a good experience for partners. I think if somebody is not interested in something, like, hard boundaries are hard boundaries. And anal sex is a completely legitimate hard boundary. Like, if that's not a thing you want, then that's not a thing you want. And I think saying, hey, I don't think that that would be pleasurable for me, but perhaps there's an engaging place in the conversation where there's something else in that space. Like, I could imagine a conversation with a partner who said, I want to do this. And I'd be like, okay, I don't know that I would want to do this. I don't know that this would be pleasurable to me, but maybe I would be okay with doing it to you first. And like, maybe if you were okay with me playing with your butt and we could try that for a while, and if you would be comfortable with that, I could see if I'm comfortable with that. And then maybe I would let you try something out. But I think we also, you know, in conversations about sex often, and I think porn has a lot to do with this, right? Porn is a deep cut, right? You don't start porn at the beginning of a scene as it would in real life. You'd cut right in, like deep into the, we're naked, we're doing this. And so you only see the final scene. You don't see any of the lead up. Like, anal is a final scene, but there's lots of things that you can do to say, well, how about you give me a full body massage and you can spend a bunch of time massaging my butt, but you can't put anything in it. And let's see if I like that. Let's see if that's fun for me. And if that's fun for me and you're really good at that, and I feel like you're taking care of my pleasure and like that is a thing that works, well, maybe we can do another night where like, you can try with a finger and I can see if I like that. But like, you know, anal is skydiving, or maybe it's like, you know, skiing the double black diamond. You don't just get off the ski lift and go like, cool, I rented skis. It says double black. I'll just go down to the bottom and I'm sure it'll be fine when I get there. No, you learn how to ski. You spend time on the greens and the blues and you work your way up to it. And any time in there, you're allowed to, everybody's allowed to say, oh, hey, actually this skiing thing isn't for me anymore. I've had enough of it. I've had a taste. I don't want any more tastes.
You know, again, I think this is brilliant what you're doing with your online platform. And traditionally, as women and girls, we're taught to please the man, right? And, you know, again, it's terrifying having a teenage daughter because the pressure that's put on girls to have sex at a young age is absolutely terrifying for me. And you know, obviously my daughter has me as a mother who, you know, works in the industry of sexual and reproductive health. So she gets used to me talking to her about these things and talking to her about the dangers. And not a lot of mothers have that tool, right? And they don't know what to do. But what I was leading up to is I was raised by a Roman Catholic mother. And, you know, religion is always fear-based. And you're taught various things at a very young age. You know, you've got to like put a little ribbon around your hair and bake apple pie and be there for your husband. And there's this book called The Rules, and it's just all about serving the man. And I think that's ingrained in still to this day, where we're becoming more sex positive, right, as the world develops. But it is still very much there, where girls think, especially young girls, think, okay, well, if I don't do this to the boy, then he's not going to like me. And then it's not about them. It's about us pleasing the man. And I talk about this often on the podcast because I just thought it was such a brilliant film, Leo Grande. I hope you've seen it. But the plot was woman married, I think she was a librarian, to a man for 30 years, and she never had an orgasm because she basically just served her husband and didn't have any pleasure. And then he died. And so she rented a gigolo to teach her. Yeah, it's a fantastic movie. I just thought that good on filmmaking, right, of telling that story, because it would have just had such an incredible impact. And I have a million of those stories that I could tell.
And I think there's so many interweaving threads to this. But one of them that I will pick apart from Leo Grande in life is the ability to like have pleasure and to recognize pleasure. And I think pleasure is remarkably empowering, right? But I will own, as being someone who, it took me a really long time to sort of recognize sexual pleasure, right? I'm pretty independent. I'm pretty sex positive. I've always been that. I had a mother who was in reproductive health. She's a professor in public health. And even so, it took a while for me to sort of learn what feels like pleasure to me. But when you do, when you have a sense of this feels good, it is much easier to understand this does not feel good, right? But if I don't know what good feels like, if I don't know what good sex is supposed to do to my body, or the way it's supposed to feel in my brain, in my emotions, in my tingly bits, then it's harder for me to say, oh, this is bad because I'm not feeling this, right? If I don't know what I'm supposed to be feeling, then I can't be like, oh, this isn't the right. So I think embracing conversations about pleasure, even in young children, not even necessarily sexual pleasure, but like, oh, it feels good when the water is the right temperature and it feels bad when the water is the wrong temperature. Recognizing this is how my body feels good. This is how to articulate how my body feels good, and to recognize and articulate when my body feels bad kind of builds those patterns that you can bring into sex.
Elizabeth, you are a trailblazer. We're sadly out of time. You can get more information on the work that Elizabeth is doing at the Body Agency and at Amorous. And we just need to have session 1, 2, and 3 here, because we haven't covered enough.
We barely got into the games and uncovering shared fantasies and all kinds of things you can do on Amorous.
I think we need to do another show specifically on games and fantasy and role play. And please, listeners, do write in. You can write to me directly at kateroberts@thebodyagency.com. I know that you've loved hearing from Elizabeth, and we want to know exactly what you need. So, Elizabeth, thank you so much for joining us. Can't wait to have you back on the show.
Thank you so much. This was wonderful.
Thank you for joining me for this episode of Sex, Body, and Soul. Remember, you can find all my favorite products and resources to support your health and sexual wellness through my one-stop shop, The Body Agency. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave us a rating and review on your favorite podcast listening platform. We are actually partnering up with Vital Voices to get much-needed dignity kits to the refugees in Ukraine. Girls and women do not have access to personal hygiene products that keep them safe and healthy. Please go to thebodyagency.com to donate a dignity kit today. Be sure also to sign up for our email list at The Body Agency for the latest curated recommendations from our industry experts, and use our special promotional code PODCAST10 to get a 10% discount. Thank you for listening.